Hey, we're in Balosta. We're at the point where Yisro is trying to make a decision what he's going to do. We're told that Klal Yisroel at this stage of the game are supposed to be in Eretz Yisroel within 22 days, and I don't know how the number 22 came about, but that's what they say. And Moshe is getting them ready, giving them the instructions as what's going to happen. And Yisro said, I got to go back to Midian. And Moshe said, why? Moshe says, don't you think it's better that you, Yisro, stay and go to Eretz Yisroel? You are a ger. And I know, even though you're a ger, you won't be given a section in the land, but the Torah tells us that for havto as a ger, you have to love a ger, and you're going to be treated royally. You don't have to worry about not being a landowner. He says, yes, you won't get fields, but you will live in the fruitful city of Yerichai and its surroundings. And you can farm its fields, he says, until the Beis HaMikdash is built. And when the Beis HaMikdash is built, Mashiach will take care of you, because that's the game plan. It says Yerichai, which was noted for exceedingly fertile soil, and which had date palms, was not initially allocated to any Shevet. It was considered common property of all of the Jewish people. It says, since all of the Shvatim wanted to be able to donate their property for the site of the Beis HaMikdash, it was decided that whatever Shevet Hashem would choose to put the Beis HaMikdash in their place would be compensated by the rest of the Shvatim with Yericho, and so they would in fact all be giving. Yisro said, no, I've got significant rationale for leaving. First of all, I left everything I own in Midian, but I have a family there who are ignorant. They don't realize the truth of Torah, and I think I'm required to go back and teach them and turn them into gerim. And he said, the year I left was a poor year. There was drought in my area, and I borrowed money from various people because I took on myself the responsibility of providing sustenance to all the poor in the area. And the last thing I want my creditors to think is that I skipped out and I became a yid to avoid paying. That would be a chilul Hashem. I'm needed there, and what can I contribute to Klal Yisroel, Moshe? You are there. You're the greatest Navi ever. You've got Aaron, who is close to you. I don't add anything, but I can go somewhere where I can make a real contribution. Moshe still insisted that he did not want Yisro to leave. Moshe was afraid that if the first ger, after the giving of the Torah, left, it would be a message to the nations of the world that gerim are maltreated. They don't get the respect they deserve, and it would be a chilul Hashem. Moshe said, if you leave us, you who are great, and if people will say, if Yisro couldn't be accepted, none of us could. And those neshamas that are supposed to come back to Klal Yisrael as Geirim will be persuaded not to join. And don't underestimate the value of your wisdom. You're the one who came up with the system of the judges. And there are other issues that your perspective on life will give us wisdom and leadership. It says, Yisro, none, if, right? And he said, look at the opportunity your children you will have, or you do have already, who came with you will have to learn Torah. It says that nonetheless, Yisro left. Moshe, however, convinced Yisro that he would go alone and he would not deprive anyone else of his family of being with the Jewish people going to Israel. Yisro's children and grandchildren, not from Moshe, entered, and they lived in Jericho for 440 years. Until the Beis HaMikdash was built in the area of Binyamin, in which case Jericho became part of Binyamin's possessions. He says that there are other Mefarshim who say he did not leave. He says the Ramban takes another approach. He said, Yisro did leave for a period of time. He says, he was there before Matan Torah, and he came back after Matan Torah. The Ramban, quoting the Sifri, says that once he returned, Yisro, in fact, stayed with his family, did go into Eretz Yisrael, and he says the Medrash Tanchuma also states that Yisro went to Eretz Yisrael. It's who, Yisro? Well, we know Yisro was there. The question is, did he personally go to Eretz Yisrael or not? And that's a machlekes of the Mefarshim. We don't know. We don't know how long he stayed with the generation of the desert. No. Because he wasn't involved in that sin. If he went into Eretz Yisrael, it's because he, like Moshe, like others, okay, he was not part of that sin. I mean, if the Medrash Tanchuma says Yisro went into Eretz Yisrael and lived there, we know he wasn't subject to that problem. The other thing we know, and if you want to take another approach, is we know that in the 40th year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved the last people who were scheduled to die that year, and they all went into Eretz Yisrael. So you've got that as well. Okay? He wasn't part of a tribe. We just said he was given Jericho to live in. He was given it for 440 years, he and his descendants, until the Beis HaMikdash was built. They were in Jericho. I don't know. I really can't tell you. Okay? All right. I don't know what happened with the Jews, with the people, the Erev Rav and others who came with. I don't know if they died in the Midbar or not. I don't know if Yisro's family was in fact the only family of Gerim that came into Eretz Yisrael. I don't know of any other, but it doesn't mean that there wasn't. But also, we don't have any discussion of any land being allocated to other Gerim in Eretz Yisrael. So if they were there, how did they live or whatever? Maybe they were set up in businesses or whatever. You know, they were allowed to rent fields. I mean, we have that mitzvah, hafta es ager, we have to love a ger. So any Gerim who came were treated superbly. The fact that they couldn't own land, that's something a Kodesh Baruch Hu said. But it doesn't mean that you couldn't treat them, you know, rent them property at a low price and let them have the yield. So I'm sure that's what happened. Yeah. We're told that from Yisro's family, Yivetz, or Asniel ben Knas, who was the first of the Shoftim after Yehoshua. He was a descendant. Right? It says as well that some of the descendants of Yisro actually took up desert area around Eretz Yisroel, and I would imagine if they did that, they may have been the first people in history to turn the desert green. Yeah. It says, Yivetz was teaching in a great base of Medrash with many, many Yidden attending. Koihanim, Leviim, Nesiim, like, you know, all of Yisro's descendants said, we're only Gerim. How do we join this group? And so they sat themselves, it said, somewhat at the end, at the entrance of the Beis HaMedrash, where they learned. And we're told that because of their great humility and the fact that they gave such deference to others, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed them with an extraordinary ability in Torah. And many of them became the heads of Sanhedrin and taught Torah to all of Klal Yisroel. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomena that people, right, who, you know, as we say, were chutz l'machne, not part of the mainstream, somehow have a greater appreciation for Torah and have greater efforts towards it. I remember the famous story my son told me years ago. Rabbi Usher Wade, who was a ger and who was a Lutheran minister, right, got up in Baltimore, and he was a well-known rav and speaker, and he said, can you imagine, all you guys have to learn Torah from a goy like me. Anyway, but that's the story of Klal Yisroel, that we have these tremendous people. And that's what we say. The Gerim, the Neshamas that were going to join Klal Yisroel, were at Sinai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu let them absorb whatever we say sparks of spirituality existed amongst the nations and bring them back into Klal Yisroel. At this stage of the game, Okay, we are now getting to what we call the pivot in the Torah. This is where we start to go from the proposed 22-day sojourn going into Eretz Yisrael to the elongated stay in the desert. The first thing that happened is when Moshe, it says, and it's a medrash, that when Moshe told the Jews they were going to leave Har Sinai, they were anxious to leave. And it says they were like school kids on the last day of school, like, enough already. And they may have felt that, you know, they had enough of this living near Har Sinai, whatever it entailed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu found this to be an inappropriate reaction. And it says, it seems that they were indicating that they were burdened in some ways by the amount of Torah and mitzvos they had. 3 days later, they complained about the fact that they couldn't survive on the mun alone and they needed meat. And the Medrash tells us that following these two missteps, there was a third. But the Torah didn't want to put three in a row, because three is in a chazakah, and didn't want someone to be able to say, ah, look at those people. Three in a row, they set up a chazakah that they were basically going downhill in a spiral they couldn't stop.
Now, the mud itself, right? Obviously, it tastes like whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, like, what was the kasha? Like, you had steak. So
Why weren't they happy with the mud?
No, if you're eating it, it tastes like what you want, and what's the problem? Unless it's just a visual thing. That maybe just look the same.
You got to understand that they were living human beings in an angelic environment. Right? The mun lasted 1 day. You couldn't store anything, okay? So that every day, right, you had to get another amount of mun. And the mun was a miracle food. If your spiritual level waned, instead of having the mun 10 feet away from your tent, it might have moved 100 feet further, and people would see this. In other words, the mun almost announced your level of kedusha. That's a very hard way to live. Also, the idea that I've got to depend every day that this regular thing is going to happen is also difficult. We also know that the mun was a miracle sustenance in that you whatever came in never went out. There was no need to basic, there was no waste product. You might say it's pure protein. Well, I don't know what it was, okay? But basically it all stayed in the body. So they realized, right, hold on, we haven't had the need, you know, to go to a washroom now for 35 days. Like, it's just a difficult way to live. And yet, with all that infusion of spirituality, they still were human beings. They still had whatever taivas and things like that. So I can understand the discomfort. And it was never everybody who complained. Like, you know, the problem is that when we read the Chumash, we read it like It's one behavior by all. I remember a great Talmud Chacham came to visit when I was living in Toronto, and he was makubal too, but not like one of these guys that'll sell you seats in Gan Eden. And he said, "Did you ever think that every Jew in the Midbar, were they all Shomrei Torah Mitzvos? Weren't there any guys in the Midbar who were off the derech?" He said, "They were human beings." He said, "You know, nowhere does it say they were completely like Malachim all the time."
I mean, you would think that when you see Nisim happening in front of you.
Yeah, but they say, right? But if you, okay, so you see Nisim, you're going to change. But what happened with the Egel? The Egel happened how many, Moshe was gone for 40 days after the greatest revelation in the history. So the answer is, I think Rabbi Wein and others say this, one nes doesn't transform a person. It can inspire you temporarily, okay? You know, we saw, I think, the most moving moment in my life was the day I saw them blow shofar in 67 at the Kol Cell. Like, that blew my mind totally. But for how many days? And that's what it is. In other words, we didn't become angels. We remained human beings. And it's only reinforcement that works with the spiritual elevation of the people.
And that's more or less the creation of the human, that's what a human being is.
That's the way God made us. We'll see great things. We'll see the splitting of the sea. We'll see sounds on Har Sinai, and yet we're still able to make a mistake. You know?
It wears off. That's why you can't walk away from Torah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they didn't have a Kabbalah yet. I mean, you know, I mean, they were living totally new experiences all the time. And, you know, it was challenging. It wasn't the easiest life. And so we got to understand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu called them the smartest door bina, knowledge, okay? But again, they were human beings. They couldn't transcend to a higher level on their level. We couldn't even have walked in their footsteps. I mean, they were so much greater. And yet, somehow the eighth, you know, I think the Gemara says, the greater the person, the greater the Yetzer Hara. You know, you read stories in Tanakh that great people made errors. And you say, how? What do you mean, how? His Yetzer Hara was as strong as his ability to be a tzaddik. Even if it wasn't that case, he wouldn't have free will anymore. In other words, if it was so obvious to do the proper thing at every moment, you know, you become an angel. You're not a human being. So all these things are fraught with difficulty. Right? We're going to turn. Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, right. I mean, we have to assume they had the ability to transcend the experience in Mitzrayim, all the schmutz and the effect it had. And they failed in their mission, not ours. And as many of the Gedolim often say, if only our mitzvahs had as much kedusha in them as their averus, you know how great we would be. So we don't really understand, you know. We cannot relate to them as human beings on our level. I mean, I mean, it's an amazing thing. When you sit back and think about it, it really totally boggles the mind. Okay. We're gonna, we're,